Right? We see that after the peak in 2001 with startup investments, there's a decline in general startup and VC funding. But for circular economy, that decline never happened, right? It's still increasing and it's now at an all-time high.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Here we are again at IFA, the world's leading trade fair for environmental technologies. In the previous episode, we looked at the macroeconomic potential of circular economy. Today, we zoom in on startups. Circular Republic launched its new circular startup landscape, and we will talk to the authors and figures behind this report. The first conversation is with Leonard Teichert, program lead at Circular Republic, and he will talk us through the key insights of the report. Afterwards, we talked to Bruno Rudnick, managing partner of SEF Ventures and one of the main contributors to the report. The report is full of information for companies looking to cooperate with startups, for investors identifying crucial fields of investments, and for startups who are looking for the next big challenge to solve. Therefore, we will also add the link to the report to the show notes. Let's start with Leo. Our guest today is Leonard Teichert, program lead at Circular Republic. He just published the Circular Economy Startup Landscape 2026. Leonard, what is the startup landscape?
Hi, Patrick. Thank you so much for the invitation. Well, the startup landscape or the circular economy startup landscape is our attempt to track startup activities in the circular economy area in Europe. Where are gaps? Where is innovation happening right now? Where is the money flowing? It's important for our work to understand what's happening on the ground. And so we use that as a tool, basically. So to us, it is really a tool to signal what is going on, but also to keep a close eye on the developments that are relevant for our work.
Okay. And how does it help you in daily business with stakeholders? I mean, Circular Republic is an enabler, an ecosystem driver, and you're in contact with many different stakeholders. How does it help you there?
It's a tool that helps us to connect the corporates that we're working with together with the startups that drive specific innovation that is currently lacking in the corporate space. And that is one of our basic USPs, right? We bring together the innovation space with the established corporate space to bridge these gaps and close material loops in the real world.
And what are you seeing? So where do we have more than enough startups?
Well, I think specifically when it comes to circular inputs, meaning bio-based or biodegradable inputs, we have a very large number of startups in Europe that is substitutes for carbon-based materials, substitutes for fossil-based materials, substitutes for plastics. That's where really a lot of startups have been founded in the past. And that's a space that probably will need to consolidate. Not all of these startups will scale. Not all of these startups can scale. Probably we need sort of a standardization at some point also in this space. But it's great to see that so many people are thinking about regenerative solutions at this point.
And when you say there are too many, is it like based on any market sizing or is it just like the sheer amount of startups?
It's the proportion compared to startups in other parts of the value cycle, right? If you look at the value cycle and see how startups are distributed along the circular value chain or value creation, then there is too many in quotation marks, right? Startups in the bio-based inputs space and too little when it comes to critical raw materials, for example. And in order to bring circular economy to an industrial level, we would need to bring it to the European industry. And that probably will not work alone with plastic substitutes.
Okay. Yeah, clear. You already mentioned critical raw materials. So can you give us an overview of where do we lack startup innovation in Europe?
So as I just teased that, we are lacking innovation in critical raw materials and in general in the end of life aspects of the circular economy when it comes to closing material loops, when it comes to dismantling end of life products, when it comes to automatically refurbishing or refurbishing them in an automated manner. So everything that has to do with the last quarter of the value cycle, basically before we enter a new life cycle again, is underrepresented to some extent. And that is specifically so in the critical raw material space. We, however, see that specifically the startups in that space are top-notch, right? We have a couple of startups in that space that are really, really at the forefront of what they're doing worldwide, but they're too little at this point, right? If it comes to magnets, for example, if it comes to heavy and light rare earth elements, these areas are very underrepresented at this point.
Okay, and I mean, I was initially thinking once we have everything bio-based, then we don't need so much the downstream solutions. But I guess it will take some time to have a bio-based magnet.
I absolutely agree with you. That should be the vision, right? We should never drive away from that vision that at some point you have a bio-economy, basically. But to be realistic, that will take a while. And also the respective transition technologies, clean energy, they require tons and tons of critical raw materials. And we need to think about a way to keep them in productive loops as well.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. So now you named a few gaps. Well, what does it take to close these gaps and bring more startup founders to that field and also scale up their solutions?
That's a really good question, right? I don't have the full answer to that. But one interesting observation is that, and that's also a reason why there are so many startups in the bio-based space. People see some problems more likely than other problems, right? People saw that there is a packaging issue and that there is a plastics issue. And that's why so many smart people decided to do something about that. There are so many industry-related issues that are just hidden somewhere and that only people that are really deep into that industry recognize and see the problem. And so I think what we really have is a problem founder match algorithm, so to say. So there is a specific problem in a specific industry, and there is a smart person that can actually solve the problem. Because we have the smart people in Europe, right? We have the engineers and the specialists. They just need to get to the problems. And I think communication also from a corporate perspective is key in that regard. But I think that's one of the key elements. And then the other aspect is that, of course, most of these innovations are hardware-based, and there is still a certain hesitation, specifically when it comes to early-stage investments in hardware in general. It's just more difficult to scale, more likely to fail, and in general, more risky for investors compared to, let's say, the next dating platform.
I will ask Bruno about that in a second. Yeah. About the hardware, not the dating platform. Yeah. But let's transition to that topic already and look at the capital side. You also looked at funding in circular economy startups. So how did that develop over the course of your reports?
So we started doing these reports in 2023. And back then, sort of circular economy started to develop some dynamic, some positive dynamic. And since then, we observed something quite remarkable. If, at least looking at Europe, the share of circular economy investments continuously grew over the last four reports and years. Of course, our method of measuring that changed a bit, but the general trend, so let's not talk in absolute numbers, but the general trend is a very positive one. And specifically compared to the overall startup investment trend, right? We see that after the peak in 2001 with startup investments, there's a decline in general startup and VC funding. But for circular economy, that decline never happened, right? It's still increasing and it is now at an all-time high. So that's great news for the space and the community.
Cool. Wonderful. Leo, we will add the link to the Circular Economy Startup Landscape 2026 to the show notes. And I guess everyone who wants to have the detailed breakdown and you missed and still want to be part of the map, they can reach out to you, right?
Definitely. And we're also going to publish a written report accessible for everybody.
Wonderful. Leo, thanks for your work and providing some insights.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
So I'm here with Bruno Rudnick, managing partner of SEF Ventures and basically host of the startup area. So we're basically in your living room here, Bruno.
Welcome. Living room, almost sleeping room, right? Yeah, after day four now. Yeah.
Bruno, you work intensively with startups at IFAD, but also before and after IFAD, you invest in startups, in circular economy startups. How does it feel?
Well, first and foremost, well, thanks, Patrick, for having me, for the opportunity to talk here, at IFAD, as you said, in my living room for a week, at least, or 4 days. Yeah. Well, how does it feel? Well, of course, a lot of excitement. Yeah. I mean, we really believe we invest in the future of the economy, of the circular economy and breakthrough innovations. But then again, I mean, it's all about turning breakthrough innovations into actual solutions. And I think this also not only reflects the spirits of investing into circular economy, but also why we are doing this here at IFAD with the startup area in terms of really like matching startups, their innovations with partners and other network players to really, you know, yeah, provide money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is only part of the fun. I think really like creating the networks that are necessary to grow these innovations into solutions as a set, which is really like the full part of the story and then the real fun.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's super important. Yeah. As you said, to bring the startups together with future customers, with investors. I just talked to Leo about the key findings of the startup landscape 2026. And there's, of course, also the venture perspective in. And you, I mean, you know the startup perspective, you know the circular economy perspective and the venture capital perspective. And there is almost always this struggle for hardware-based startups. And in circular economy, there are many startups are hardware-based.
Yeah.
The struggle for hardware-based startups to get capital. Why is that?
Yeah, well, there's a number of reasons, right? So, of course, traditionally, when you look at, let's say, venture capital and in Germany, in Europe, it used to invest a lot into more asset ledger solutions, software, B2C, etc. So I would say, yes, I mean, those technologies that scale faster, right? So that's probably a bit of the tradition of VC and financing in Europe. But I think also the comfort zone of these investors, right? I mean, also the knowledge that is required to invest into circular economy, in particular hardware, startups that is required, like support them while operationally with the scaling. And I'm talking about technical scaling from lab, pilot, demo, first commercial, also commercial scaling in terms of go to market, understanding the business models, the markets, the partnerships that are necessary. And this requires really like a special skill set, I would say, also from a DC investor. And this is something where we as SAF also have identified a bit of a market gap or an opportunity for us to come in with a different type of skill set, because we see that startups are struggling, that co-investors are struggling to find lead investors for circular economy hardware startups. And this is where we see a good opportunity to come in with a specific skill set of really actively not only investing money, but supporting the startups on their scaling pathway.
Okay.
So yes, it's harder, of course, but still I believe it's a good opportunity. I also believe there is sufficient opportunity in terms of number of startups. You mentioned talking to Leo, they were presenting the circular economy startup landscape. So there is good deal flow. There are opportunities. There is a big problem that we are addressing. So after the problem, there's a market, hopefully. If there's a market, companies are being built. If companies are being built, they're looking for venture capital or for capital. It's not only venture capital. And we just have to make sure that the market framework and the conditions are right. The right set of financing, regulatory framework with a certain reliability over time. So I think, yes, there is an opportunity, not an easy one, but we are happy to tackle it.
Yeah, wonderful. And Leo pointed out that there are especially a few areas or a few opportunity fields where there's still untapped potential. And combining that with what you just said about the skill set it needs to invest in hardware-based startups, let's flip that a bit. And like, I've always a founder applying for funding, looking for the ideal partner. What are like 2-3 essential aspects I should take care of, especially in comparison to, let's say, software-based honeywell. Yeah. What's essential that I have prepared before talking to an investor like you?
Yeah, well, maybe number one, it's never too early to talk to us or to a VC investor, because it's really like it's a journey. It's a fundraising journey. It's a company build-up journey. Mm-hmm. And I think as a founder, no matter, you know, if you think about the go-to-market, the business model, the technical scale-up, but also for the financing, from day zero, I would say, or zero plus one, try to map out, try to figure out how your financing journey could look like.
Right.
So it's not all about venture capital. I mean, we as a venture capital fund, we are just a small part of the game.
Yep.
And it's really important, let me call that, to think about something like a layered capital structure, which again has various aspects. What do I mean with that? So different types of capital for different stages. Venture capital, strategic capital, public capital and private capital, to start with. But then also, for example, try to finance with your venture money, maybe more the tech side of the company. And try to manage the tech risk. Whereas when you need asset financing or when you have asset financing, which you almost always have in, well, the circular economy hardware, at least, try to find other financing solutions for that, grants, strategic investors. That is an interesting, partially controversial aspect, when to get in strategic investors. Flip side or downside maybe being, if you take them too early, you might block like the exit pathway, talking about the financial journey. You might block something on the market when you talk about the sales side of things. But then again, I think it's not so much about yes or no, or if you take a strategic investor, but rather how you take them. No, but I'm quite convinced that whether it's related to material science, chemicals, recycling, I mean, look at IFAD, the players that are here, they play an important role in the layered capital structure I was talking about. But again, think about this from the beginning. That was your question. Have the journey, the financing journey, nicely mapped out from the beginning.
Okay, cool. And just a side remark for everyone listening right now. Last year, we did a whole series on venture capital and circularity. So 9 interviews with VC funds, also hardware-based. Cool. So everyone who's wants to dive deeper into that.
Yeah, great. No, super helpful work that you're doing with that one, because it's really a journey. A financial journey, financing journey, technical upscaling, and all at the same time.
Last question, Bruno. Let's not forget about the customers. I mean, in the end, it's about solving customer problems. I sometimes feel that when I look into the LinkedIn post, the newspaper, everyone wants to have this transformational technology. And at the same time, when it comes to talking to customers, customers don't want to change that much. Everyone is looking for drop-in solutions and stuff that fits in existing processes. So how to balance that? When do you rather say, okay, I don't want to change too much of the process? But then maybe also the impact might be limited? Or is this a wrong tension I'm making up here?
I think it is. I think it is, Patrick. So the question is there a transformation, or can we have transformation without changing, right? And I think the answer is no, you can't have that. So it's more about the question, well, I think we agree that we need industrial transformation. Easy. And then the question is, what kind of change does this kind of trigger? And I really think, yes, we are industrial players, value chains have to change. And I also am convinced that it's not necessarily about avoiding change, but rather in industry in particular, but rather about how to manage organizational change. And I would say, you know, corporates rarely adopt a new technology, but what they adopt is, how can I call it? That they adopt reduced risk, maybe? And now another question is, how do you achieve that? Yeah. I mean, what can you do as a hardware startup to reduce risk in this adoption process? Well, several things, you know, have a nicely step-by-step defined scaling model, know how to scale from lab to pilot, demo, how many iterations, a modular technology approach, find the first movers on customer side, maybe not the big names, but maybe a smaller one, a privately owned a company where the owner has a different set of incentives, maybe to move first, create some nice references, right? So that the larger ones can follow. Many aspects to that, how to, reduce risk in this adaption journey. And then maybe another point in terms of how to manage this organizational change. Well, of course, we all want to promise the better future with what we are doing, sure. But I think at the end, it's rather for a corporate about solving a painful solution that they have.
Sure.
And again, that could have many aspects, right? It could be a cost pressure, insecurity in the supply chain, even regular things or pressure, right? And we are here in the environmental technology sector. So if you really can, here manage the organizational change in terms of then really solving pain points that they have, I think that is really, really helpful. And then the impact at the end, hopefully, will come in the longer term, not by itself, but based on the, solving a pain point.
Yeah. Bruno, wonderful. I mean, thanks for sharing these really specific insights and inviting all of us to your living room here at IFAD.
I think, let's see. If I stay longer, I don't think so. Yeah, last day today, but we'll be back, right? So this has been 8 years of Startup Area. And in 2 years, Munich IFAD 2028 will be 10 years of startup journey. So thanks Patrick for having me and for being around and really supporting the ecosystem. Very helpful what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool, thanks.
This was the third episode in our IFAD special. We started a series with a view on sovereignty, continued with the economic potential of circularity, and in this episode looked at the startup landscape in Europe. The next episode will bring all of this together and we will share and present to you the winners from the Circular Technology Award by Knorr Bremse with a focus on critical raw materials and automated disassembly. Stay tuned and please make sure that we drive a profitable circular economy. And don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.